Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's midday at the movies. I'm Tom Hall. Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post join me with a report on the mood at the Sundance Film Festival as the Me Too movement makes itself heard at festivals and award ceremonies. The Oscars are a little more than a month away. We'll talk about what films live up to their pre-Oscar hype and whether or not the Academy is getting to be as inclusive as the industry it represents. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Waitress at the Hippodrome in Baltimore. First, the news. And good afternoon, everybody. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. That music can mean one of two things. Number one, our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, has an unquenchable urge to hear music that appears to have been composed or at least arranged by a person who's just come back from Cuba after a four-day ether binge. That's the first possibility. The second possibility is that it's midday at the movies. I'm voting for number two. Give me door number two. It is, in fact, midday at the movies. Jed Dietz is here. He's the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. And Hornaday is a film critic for The Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. And I'm glad I read that book, Anne, because I didn't realize there was like a how to watch movies. I used to just like just go knew. To the movies and I would sit
you
down.
Sit and look
at when I was 14, I would go with Lisa Henry and we would make out. That was how I watched movies then.
That's
now,
not watching a movie.
That's making out with Lisa Henry. And I hope she's done well in life. I'm sure she has. But now, I mean, you know, I get a little snuggly with Linnell when we go, but I didn't realize there was like a technique to it. I used to just get the popcorn and just like sit there slack jawed, you know, and just watch. But now, you know, you read your book, you got to like pay attention to what they're wearing, and whether the lights
saying.
Are on, what they're saying. It's kind of got very
it's
complicated.
Work. That's
it
why
is.
I
it's
get
hard
paid
work.
To do this.
Hard work. Hard work. But now I know how to do it because I've read the book. So the Oscars coming up on March 4th. So we're going to take a deep look back at the best films of 2017 next month on Midday at the Movies because it'll be the 1st of March, just a few days before the actual ceremonies. And you, of course, will predict with unfailing surety who will win in every category.
Really?
So saving us all the trouble of watching the Oscars. We could just keep watching those, you know, Murder, She Wrote marathons instead on that Sunday night. But today we're going to look at some of the nominees that we haven't yet had a chance to chat about because there are a few that we haven't talked about. And we'll get a recap of what went down at the Sundance Film Festival because Jed has just returned from there. So listeners, we want to know what was your favorite movie of 2017, whether or not it was nominated for an Oscar or anything else. What did you like as you look back on the year gone by? 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and to find us in the Twittersphere @midday_WYPR. So, Jed, let's talk about Sundance.
Sure.
You're out there in Park City, Utah. Yep. Any particular themes or, you know, the things that stick out to you from this year's festival?
Yeah, there are no themes officially as part of the festival, but it is certainly always sort of an amazing anthropological look at what's going on in American culture and now even worldwide because they have a good collection of films from around the world. I would say two things. Just in the film part of Sundance, the idea of kids navigating through dysfunctional either families or parts of life because of poverty or drug addiction in an adult around them or whatever.
So not necessarily coming of age, but just figuring out how to get through when the adults around them are screwing up.
Yeah, and even sort of picturing some of it documentary, some of it fiction, you know, what some of those issues are and how kids handle it. And I would say in general, the message of resiliency was, as a parent, was a very reassuring thing to see. The other thing goes without saying, I guess, but, you know, a year ago, Harvey Weinstein was at Sundance marching with the women and in the beginning of what then became a very different thing for him in the Me Too movement. And Sundance has been a place where women in filmmaking has been an issue, it embraced as an issue in a way that it has not been in Hollywood. I think the numbers are that in the last decade, 4% of the top grossing films have been made by women. This year's feature-length films at Sundance were, 37% of them were made by women, many of whom I'm happy to say had been here at the Maryland Film Festival or had films at the Parkway and stuff. So they're really, it was a real celebration of another step, I think, of women into leadership positions in the film art form. And it's long overdue, but exciting.
Yeah, and Anne, you wrote a really nice piece in the Post a few days ago about the changing complexion of people in the Academy. Mm. We heard a lot about this, a couple of years ago, and it was sort of shocking to people that no people of color were nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress, that kind of stuff. But now that's not so different. Now that is a lot different, rather, a lot more different. You mentioned the people they chose to make the announcement of the nominees.
Well, yeah, it was sort of interesting this year because the announcers were Andy Serkis and Tiffany Haddish, both of whom, could easily have been nominated for what they did last year. Andy Serkis plays Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movies in a motion capture performance that is done behind a lot of, makeup and prosthetics and computer-generated imagery, but it's still an amazingly expressive, very fully realized performance. And Tiffany Haddish basically stole the whole show in this comedy called Girls Trip. But having them presenting the nominees was almost this tacit statement from the Academy saying, of course, we would never nominate them for these, for CGI performance or for something, like a comedy. They've always been very snobby about those genres. But we did see some cracks in that with the nomination of Logan, the screenplay for an X-Men spinoff, was nominated for adapted screenplay. We obviously saw some, there were lots of African-American actors nominated throughout the categories, but then we saw attention given to Mudbound, which a lot of people thought would be shut out because it was a Netflix movie. And there's so much ambivalence and anxiety around Netflix in Hollywood.
And that was in theaters, though, right?
It was on Netflix
and in theaters.
It was a handful. It was a handful of theaters, but people are still freaked out about Netflix's. I mean, they've been very aggressive in saying we don't care about theatrical. Amazon takes pains to open all of their movies in a full theatrical run before they make them available, or maybe simultaneously while they make them available. Netflix isn't nearly as precious about the theatrical experience. They're very, very ruthless when it comes to that. And so, I don't know, I do think that this is all a generational change, and I think that was hastened by Cheryl Boone Isaacs' decision to open up membership to younger people, including women, including people of color. But I just think it's almost more of a generational thing than anything else that's going to, open. They're looking at things in a new way, in a fresh way. They're not quite so siloed in terms of what they deem prestige and what they...
And this has to do with the fact that the membership has changed. I mean, they changed the rules about who can be a member, how long you can be a member. I mean, there were a whole bunch of, frankly, older white men who were members.
And there still are. Make no mistake. It's still mostly an older white male organization. But the thing about the Academy is that they can change these rules. They're constantly changing their rules in particular categories and branches. I mean, it's a very fluid, they're not that calcified, and they don't need to be that calcified. And I think that bodes pretty well for the institution.
Well, and you mentioned Cheryl Boone Isaacs, and one of the things she did in trying to correct this all-white, all-male sort of...
And we should remind folks, she is the chair of the
board. She was the president. She's the past president of the Academy.
Yeah. Right. The tradition had been the artists that would be invited into the Academy each year would be 15 or 20 people, something in that range. And it was always a great privilege, stuff like that. And so people were projecting, well, it really changes. It's just going to take years and years, because even if you go from, just a couple of people of color or women to half or something, it just, to move the needle, it's going to take quite a few years. And she just blew the door open and said, well, we're going to invite a whole lot more people in, and then we'll start changing it, really making some material difference right away. And Anne's right. It's not going to, you can't flip a switch, but because the tradition is the tradition.
But yeah, but we talked about this before in light of the men being accused of sexual harassment, where so many things in Hollywood take months and years to turn around. These guys just got fired. Spacey, out.
Yeah.
Right. Louis C.K.
People can
out.
Move fast
Weinstein,
when they're
out. They're changing the name of the company. They're taking the Weinstein logo off of all the movies they've already made. I mean, it's just amazing.
They can move fast when they really want to. And the cool thing about this is that it's not ageist, because look, they nominated Christopher Plummer. They nominated James Ivory and Agnes Varda, all people in their 80s, you know, so... I hope that this will just be a much more expansive. I hope it's just widening the lens on what can be recognized rather than.
Yeah, and Jed, of course, no one has seen any of the movies at Sundance because they're all new and they're looking for distribution deals. But there is at least one that we're all very excited about, done by Baltimore's own Taylor Branch. He's an executive producer of a movie called King in the Wilderness. It's going to be on HBO, I believe, the day after Easter, Monday, the 2nd of April. Right. That was premiered, and Taylor did a panel afterwards with Andy Young and some folks involved in that movie. Tell us what that's about.
Well, it's about Dr. King's last 3 years, a story told, you know, obviously beautifully by Taylor in his books, but not shown much on film. This is not the saint Dr. King. This is not the perfection Dr. King. This is a man in the middle of a business crisis. Money is draining out of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. The Voting Rights Bill has been passed, so they've accomplished quite a bit.
Now, so these last 3 years are 65 to 68.
Correct. And it's a real moment of crisis for the organization and for him as a leader. And in the middle of that, he has to face a huge moral issue, which is, does he support the Vietnam War or does he not? And he decides, against all the advice of people around him, to add that to their mission. And he's called a traitor in mainstream press editorial pages. And in the middle of that, you know, young African Americans are challenging him for being, you know, not strong enough on some issues. And there's the issue of poverty is coming on their table, and they want to embrace that also. And of course, there's this horrible.
But it's also a series of interviews with people in the movement, many of whom are, you know, getting very much on in years. So we don't know how much longer we're going to have some of these people here, but HBO has been able to capture interviews with them while they're still with us.
Yeah, and it's made by a wonderful documentary team, the father and two sons called the Kuhnharts. And it's a great story. Taylor and Trey Ellis conducted most of the interviews you see with people who worked with King, and sort of take you through this totally fascinating 3-year period in his life.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And Taylor's going to be here on Midday a few days before it airs on HBO. And then he'll be in Memphis for the premiere of it. They're going to have a big screening down there as well, the official premiere, I guess.
Hoping to do something here. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope so. So, Anne, before we take a break, I want to talk about The Post, because we've been saving this. We were going to talk about it last month, but we say, no, Anne couldn't make it last month, so we're going to wait.
Oh, thank you.
So, Linnell and I saw it and just loved it.
I cried
my eyes out.
Me too.
So many times. But part of it, because I saw it with Linnell and two other friends of ours who also, like Linnell, worked at The Sun for years and years. Mm. So I'm there with three, you know, print journalists.
Ink-stained wretches.
And, you know, exactly. And we're looking at the, you know, just even the way the type is set in the plant.
The pneumatic tubes.
The pneumatic tubes, the whole thing, you know, because when Linnell and I started dating, that was happening. That's when I got to know about the newspaper business 32 years ago, because I started dating the love of my life. But I mean, as a movie, I mean, you're obviously the film critic for The Post. Mm-hmm. I mean, does it resonate with the newsroom now? And as a movie, what did you think?
Does it resonate with the newsroom now? Yes, I think it does, because I think it really is a reminder of our core values. Even though those accoutrements are gone, that technology has changed. We're not working with hot lead and linotype and pneumatic tubes, but the core mission is the same. And I think it really is a beautiful expression of that and that kind of continuation. And I think, judging from my colleagues, I think that's exactly the message they took away from it. It's why Spielberg made it. I mean, this is another example of something that was rushed into production. He made it as a response to the election of Donald Trump and what he saw was a real threat to the First Amendment and this hostility toward the media and this invocation of fake news. But it's really, in my humble opinion, it's the story of Kay Graham and how she found her voice and how she became the woman, the icon that she did become, this corporate icon, a journalistic icon. It's a prequel to All the President's Men in terms of, for, you know, this is where she and Bradley forged that relationship that made it possible for her to trust him when Woodward and Bernstein started to deliver their stories about Watergate. Her performance is absolutely magnificent because this is, again, it's really her arc and it's her transformation that we're watching. And it's all done in her performance. It's all communicated through her demeanor and her comportment and these subtle little transformations that she is so great at. And, it's a Spielberg movie. It's got those sort of, you could call them corny moments. There's some stagecraft there. You know, there's a moment on the Supreme Court steps that's pure hokum, and it gets me every time. Yeah. You know, he is a master of this, and he understands audiences. He understands what we need and what he needs to do to get something over and values over. And it's just a thoroughly entertaining, engaging movie.
And Meryl Streep has been nominated as best actress. I mean, I guess that's, the second or third time for her.
I think you left out some digits there, Tom. I want to just reinforce what Ann said. And I think great artists, and I think Spielberg is one of them, often deliver things that they don't even know they're delivering. And I think at this moment in our culture, to see this woman step totally improbably, unprepared for this role, then Meryl Streep, Ann's exactly right, does it extraordinarily well, is a great thing to see right now as women are seeking power in the film industry and other places.
Yeah, ironically, it started as a response to Trump, but then it ended up coming out in the midst of Me Too and Time's Up. And so it has this completely different resonance than I think that the filmmakers could have ever have anticipated.
And of course, now there's a discussion about whether or not to release this memo that Devin Nunes has composed, for one of the committees looking into Russia.
Continues.
So you can't make this stuff up, as we always say.
But it's just, apart from all of these resonances and echoes with the real world, it's just a really fun movie.
Yeah.
It's just fun watch. It's just thoroughly, it's a Spielberg movie.
You know,
take your popcorn and have a really good time.
He knows what he's doing. All right, Ann Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. We'll be back after a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. We're on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. Let us know what your favorite flick of 2017 was. Give us a call, send us an email, or send us a tweet. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We're going to recap the week's news from Washington and beyond with David Smith, the Washington Bureau Chief of the Guardian newspaper, and Don Lee, who covers the global and U.S. economy out of Washington for the Los Angeles Times. Plus, I'm going to talk to Deborah Hazlett, terrific actress, and Jonathan Waller, the executive director of the Everyman Theater, about their new production of A Long Day's Journey Into Night. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday at the Movies with our good friends Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival and Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post. We're going to handicap the Oscars when Jed and Ann come back next month on the 1st of March. That's just 3 days before the big night. But in the meantime, what movie did you see this year, whether or not it was nominated? That is your pick for Best Picture. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. So I have a confession to make. I saw a movie that most people just loved, thought it was great. It's been nominated for Best Picture. The star of it, Frances McDormand, has been nominated for Best Actress in a Leading Role. It's supposed to be a great movie. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Here's a little clip of a scene from this movie with Miss McDormand and Woody Harrelson, who plays a sheriff in this little town.
I'd do anything to catch the guy who did it, Mrs. Hayes, but when the DNA don't match no one who's ever been arrested, and when the DNA don't match any other crime nationwide, and when there wasn't a single eyewitness from the time she left your house to the time we found her, well, right now, there ain't too much more we can do.
Could pull blood from every man and boy in this town over the age of 8.
Their civil rights laws prevents that, Mrs. Hayes. And what if he was just passing through town?
Pull blood from every man in the country, then.
And what if he was just passing through the country?
If it was me, I'd start up a database. Every male baby that's born, stick him on it. And as soon as he'd done something wrong, cross-reference it, make 100% certain it was a correct match, then kill him.
Yeah, well, there's definitely civil rights laws prevents that.
There definitely are. Now, so, and here's the deal. That's, by the way, a scene. This is a mother, played by Frances McDormand, whose daughter has been brutally killed, probably raped in the process. And Woody Harrelson's the sheriff of the town who hasn't solved the murder after some interval. So I know a lot of folks have seen it because when we went to see it, it was packed.
Wow.
I mean, it was packed. Is that the Senator along with the Post? The Post is in the big theater. The Three Billboards is in a somewhat smaller theater. Here's my problem with this movie. So much of how the characters act is implausible. They don't act or react the way actual humans would act and react. So if you're going to have a movie, the story is about, you know, looking into the human psyche and the human condition, you have to have humans that act, who act like humans. Yeah. If you're going to have a fantastical thing, you know, if people are going to break into song or fly through the clouds, then you have, it's a different way of telling a story.
Yes.
And you don't have to hold the humans to the normal standards of human behavior. But there's so many scenes in this movie where I thought people acted implausibly. They just didn't act the way actual people would act. And it just ticked me off. The whole movie ticked me off.
I totally take your point. And it's funny because when I saw it here at the Charles in a packed house, it was a preview screening. And I think Frances McDormand, her character and the way she plays the character are so shocking. I mean, she's just a woman
and
propelled.
Riveting. It's fantastic.
Breathtaking. And she's propelled by this insatiable rage and guilt, which is clarified throughout the course of the movie. But she's this kind of dervish of anger and rage and activity and response that is, again, in terms of chiming with our current moment, it's cathartic to watch her kind of just not give any F's and go off and do these outrageous things that, as you point out, are completely implausible and not connected to anything that we recognize in our own lives, including, I might add, her relationship with her son, which is kind of weirdly dissociated and kind of, you know.
But it's not just her. It's everybody
it's
else.
It's everybody. But I think this is, so I think the experience of watching her is so powerful that it's easy to get swept away with that, as was I.
And
I think
you gave it a pretty good review.
I did. And I think it's upon further reflection, as time goes by, I find more and more, I'm in touch with more sentiments as yours in terms of not really believing it. Martin McDonough, who wrote and directed, is a playwright. It's very theatrical in terms of the way he kind of torques things and machines things into behaving the way he wants them to behave rather than an organic truth. Yeah. So I have many more problems with it in retrospect than I did at the time.
So we yield the remainder of our time to the gentleman from Baltimore. So, Jed, it's up to you to defend this movie, which a lot of people really, really liked. I mean, and the performances are stunning.
Yeah. So, I mean, like anything, I think it'll either connect with you or it won't. I mean, I think the criticism of it being unrealistic is a criticism that could be placed against a lot of legendary movies. I mean, I don't know how much the dialogue in The Godfather or Notorious or, I mean, pick a movie, you know. But I do think, and he is a playwright, Anne's comment is right, but I think at the core of it is this incredible performance. Well, I would say there are three. I think the Sam Rockwell and the Woody Harrelson performances are pretty great too, but is this woman who is frustrated beyond frustration in the lack of justice, the lack of seeking justice. And I think this is a theatrical movie, fictional expression through her of how anybody would face that kind of frustration, especially, you know, a child being brutalized. And I think she delivers it in a way that is so unmovie-like and so ahistorical. She's so compelling and I think unbelievably attractive in this totally unique way that is not the normal movie way of portraying anybody. And I think the implausibility is sometimes come with the art form. That's
I'm not recommending people don't see it. I think it is a phenomenon in a lot of ways, and people should go check it out and see what they think. But I just there were scenes in the movie that just made no sense.
I mean,
at one point, a police officer throws a person out the window, the new sheriff walks by, and the only thing the sheriff does is fire him. He's not arrested. He's not asked about the crime. I mean, it's just
that stuff
doesn't happen. I know police get away with a lot in this day and age, but golly, gosh, but, darn. I mean,
no,
wake up.
But there are a lot of Humphrey Bogart scenes, you could say that.
But this isn't, but he's not setting that up, though. I mean, I think that the style of the movie is fighting with the theatricality of it.
I would disagree. I think it, well, anyway.
But
I mean,
he's trying to ground it in this realistic Midwestern, I don't know, I think he wants it both ways, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also think that the whole use of race and racist language and African-American characters is really opportunistic and kind of shallow in terms of just stacking the deck for and against people. I just don't buy it.
Carolyn in Baltimore sends us an email about movies that she likes. She liked Lady Macbeth.
Oh,
she said small but surprising. And on the other end of the spectrum, she really liked The Big Sick, and so did we.
Oh,
I thought The Big Sick was a much better movie than Three Billboards. Mm. And I mean, just the theatrical experience of getting to know those people and seeing what they were going through.
That was a
they were real
movie.
People. So excellent suggestions, Carolyn. Thank you so much. Jed, tomorrow is Groundhog Day.
Yep.
And at the Parkway Theater, here's a new idea. You're going to show Groundhog movie. I tell you, you must have had meeting after meeting after meeting to say, what could we show on Groundhog Day? And you decided not to show The Wizard of Oz. Excellent choice. Okay. That's a pretty good movie, though, the Groundhog Day. Bill Murray.
It's a wonderful movie.
It's a fantastic movie. And we have a 35mm print. It's one of our programming team, Albert Bernie's, come up with this hilarious Instagram thing, which is just repetition of repetition upon repetition. You know, this is a movie, however you have seen it before, if you haven't seen a 35mm print projected in a great big space on a beautiful screen, this is the way to see it.
Oh, it sounds like heaven.
Yeah, we'll have fun.
There's another movie that sounds like a very silly movie at the Parkway. And we talked about The Post and Three Billboards there at the Senator. But here at the Parkway, we have this thing called The Road Movie. And this is like dash cam recordings of car accidents.
So I can't verify this, but apparently in Russia, for insurance purposes, all vehicles have a dash cam. And this is literally a
for insurance purposes. How about KGB purposes?
Well, in Russia, it might tie to that. I'm not sure. But it is a compilation of crashes and accidents and mayhem that happens on the road. And Oscilloscope is distributing this movie. It is unbelievable. And really fun to see. I mean, it's like
it's very it's just this side of a snuff film. I mean, in terms of watching people getting into really, really serious mishaps. And but I was watching it and thinking, is this just voyeurism and silly and kind of an offshoot of our YouTube culture? But I do think having spent some time in Russia on the road, I mean, it definitely took me back to being in the Bashinu in Russia. Yeah. And it does, I think, it does evoke the Russian character in terms of this kind of the aggression and the learned passivity that I think that is a culture that they've needed to cultivate to survive, you know, like just this incredibly harsh country, both in terms of the natural elements and politically. So there is this kind of weird sense of a national mood and human nature that kind of comes through with how people react to all of these things.
So Joey in Baltimore sends us an email. He loved Mudbound, as did we all. Now, Mudbound, not nominated for Best Picture, but Joey says, this movie broke my heart at least four times. Boy, we're with you on that one, Joey. Saw a lot of my grandparents in the movie, beautiful cinematography, amazing storytelling and acting, mostly female creative production team, Mary J. Blige, give me all that you got. Now, Mary J. Blige has been nominated.
She was nominated
for Best Supporting Actor.
And so the cinematographer, Rachel Morrison, has been nominated also.
Deservedly, as was Dee Rees for her screenplay. Yep. So I'm just thrilled that Dee Rees is going to be at the Oscars. I mean, we all wanted her for director. We wanted it for Best Picture. That was disappointing, but I'm just so glad they're going to be there and be represented by these wonderful women.
New Paul Thomas Anderson movie, which Daniel Day-Lewis asserts will be his last film, Phantom Thread. Here's a little clip.
I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just waiting around like an idiot for you.
This was an ambush, Alma. To what purpose?
This is not... I know it's not going as I expected. I didn't mean these things to come out. I'm sorry, but it was meant to be nice.
Well, what did you expect?
I wanted time with you. I wanted to have you to myself.
You have me all the time.
No.
What are you talking about?
I don't. There are always people around. And if not, then there's something between us.
Something between us?
Yes.
What?
Some...
What?
Distance.
When did this happen? What happened to make you behave like this? Is it because you think I don't need you?
Yes.
I don't.
Well, that's very predictable of you.
Timing, accents,
asparagus.
Acting.
You couldn't see it, but there's asparagus is a plays a very big role.
I wondered
scene.
Why you said that word. Asparagus. No, I haven't seen the movie, so I did not know that the asparagus plays a major role.
It's a film term.
It's a film. Evidently. Asparagus. See, how to watch movies. I didn't read the appendix, evidently. Paul Thomas Anderson nominated for Best Director. I don't know, Jed, what do you think?
I love this movie. That clip is perfect for this. It's a tiny little world. Most of it shot inside this house in which this fashion designer, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, all this fictional, works. And he's this very high-level artist who makes exquisite clothes for very wealthy women. And so it's a very insular world. And his commitment to this is what the film is about, and his therefore these warped relations with other people. And I just couldn't take my eyes off him and the, you know, all the acting, and it's great. And of course, it's beautifully shot by, as Paul Thomas Anderson does. I thought it was great.
All right. Phantom Thread. And that's over at the Charles Theater. Yeah. The other thing at the Charles is The Shape of Water. And this is the movie that's gotten most mm-hmm. nominations for the Oscars. Guillermo del Toro nominated for Best Director, a bunch of other nominations. This is about a mute woman who falls in love with a thing
a
that lives in water, a creature, yeah. You know? So it's a creature rom-com love story
creature
kind
feature
of thing.
Rom-com, yes, I mean, Guillermo del Toro is a true visionary. I mean, his imagination is absolutely unstoppable, and it's on display in this film. It's not my favorite of his. I actually am not as in love with it as some of my colleagues. It's very much a fairy tale. It sets itself up as kind of a fable. I think, similar to the Three Billboards discussion, I feel that the characterizations are so broad. The bad guy, played by Michael Shannon, is just so bad. And then these supporting characters, played by Richard Jenkins and Octavia Spencer, are so kind of billboardy and obvious in terms of what they represent that I was less enchanted with this than I think I was supposed to be. But visually, it's a feast. It's a real homage to the B movies and creature features that Del Toro loves so much. And Sally Hawkins delivers a really great performance in that lead role.
Mm-hmm. So, Jed, I mean, should we read anything into the fact that it's gotten so many nominations, so many categories?
I hope it, as often happens with Oscars, this is about his career. I couldn't stand this movie. I just thought I didn't believe a word of it. I thought it was, and it gives you just what you said, Tom. It gives you the permission because you're in a surrealistic world very fast. But I thought there was no character development. I thought the humans were cartoons and misused actors. I mean, I resented the whole thing. I thought it was really, and I love his work. But,
yeah.
So I hope this attention is about honoring a really amazing career, and we'll see what happens now in the final votes.
But, do you think one of the reasons the Academy loves it so much is that it's so much about the movies? It's so self-referential?
Well, of course.
They do love history, their own history.
Yeah, but I hated it because he ruined a beautiful historic movie theater because of the bathtub overflowing.
That's right, of course. It takes place in Baltimore, by the way.
Well, sort of. I mean, they call it Baltimore, and that's the other thing that drove me crazy. I mean, that was no more like Baltimore than, you know, any soundstage would have, you know, and I don't know even why he called it Baltimore. It's sort of make up
the
a
aquarium.
Name. Well, maybe. There's Chicago has one, too. You know, in Monterey, too.
It's the only aquarium in the world here in Baltimore.
But I think it's the problem of the movie. It's so unspecific. It's visionary, but just sort of a great commitment to it, but you just need to do more work to pull this off.
And how about Call Me By Your Name?
Gorgeous. This is a beautiful...
Another coming-of-age thing, right?
Coming-of-age thing about a teenage boy living with his parents in Italy, played by Timothée Chalamet, who's just...
Incredible.
Just having a moment.
He was in Lady Bird, right?
He's been in Lady Bird. He has a little role in Hostiles that's out right now. I think a lot of people might know him from Homeland, but he's an absolutely terrific actor. Armie Hammer is his opposite number. Michael Stuhlbarg plays the dad. This is another movie that Jed was describing his feelings about watching Phantom Thread. I had this watching Call Me By Your Name. It's an environment and a world and a time and a place and a story that you just want to live in. I mean, it's so immersive and it's so beautiful. It's about nature and food and drink and the intellect and the arts
Don't
and love
sex.
And sex. And yeah. It's really... very deeply touching and a lot of just a beautiful thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of buzz on this movie, Jed, but what do you think? Not everybody's so hip to it.
No, I agree with all the compliments it's Luca Guadagnino who made this is a melodramatic visual guy and I think in sort of a great way, Bigger Splash and I Am Love, the movie with Tilda Swinton that he made. In this case, I think the script is so bad it really undercuts the movie. There's a speech by the father to the son, which should be a culmination point of a great moment that stops the movie and undercuts everything that had happened.
Oh, I totally disagree. Yeah, I couldn't disagree more. To me, that was the moment. Like I had reached a moment with this film of thinking just, oh, what a beautiful story, and then that. It was just the actual opposite. Like, I just thought it was even more spectacular. So,
well, as we used to say on Saturday Night Live, Jed, you ignorant slut.
No, I was going to say, your mileage may vary.
Your mileage may vary.
It should.
So we got to call it a day here, Jed. But before we do, opening next week, I guess at the Charles, the short films that have been nominated for Oscars are going to have a limited screening at the Charles. And, of course, the Maryland Film Festival is famous for opening each festival with series of short films. So how does this work?
Well, so they have just recently in the last few years, these have been marketed because these were the sad thing is these had no way to sort of get to market. And the Charles has always been great at bringing in these Oscar-nominated shorts. And one thing to just point out is in the animated, there are two programs. And in the animated program, there's a film that was made by a couple who live in Baltimore. We do this series called Sweaty Eyeballs throughout the year. And Max Porter is one of the couple, and he and Phil Davis do the Sweaty Eyeballs thing. And the narrator of that film also lives in Baltimore, Albert Burney. So there's a real Baltimore connection, a real joy in this thing. Max teaches at Micah, too.
Yeah, and good for the Charles that they're
it's wonderful.
Available. I remember a couple of years ago at the Maryland Film Festival, and you curated or moderated the opening night with the shorts.
Oh, that was
and
wonderful.
Stuff.
It was David terrific. Lowry. Oh, yeah, it was fabulous. Great stuff.
All right, well, always good to see you both, and great we will see you next month, and we'll be wearing our Harry Winston jewels and our rented Oscar de la Renta gowns. I've got mine. It's going to look terrific.
I can't wait.
I'm going to shave my legs, take a bath, the whole thing. Yeah, I promise. So we will talk about the Oscars in depth next time. Appreciate it. Good to see you both.
Thanks.
Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. Ann Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post. Her new book is called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. We've got a link to Ann's work in the Post and what's up at the Parkway Theater, the home of the Maryland Film Festival at WIPR.org/midday. Next up, our weekly theater review with theater critic J. Wynn Russick. We're going to talk about Waitress at the Hippodrome Theater here in Charm City. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. Stick around.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.